Hi, it's February 5th, 2018. This is Movies Podcast number 243. Is that right?
Yeah, sounds right. Either 243, 244, somewhere around there.
Somewhere around there. Anyway, more than 240. I'm Todd Gossard, my god friend. Well, you know, John thinks of himself as godlike sometimes.
But yeah, I've just been promoted.
My good friend, John Westfall. You know, I've been listening to American Gods on the Google Play, the new Google Play audiobook feature. But anyway, another story. And it's been a tough weekend for both John and I. You may notice that there is an absence of an ambient sound you may have been listening to for many, many years.
There will be no parakeet chirping in the background today. Unfortunately, I lost the last of three little parakeets that I had had for a number of years. She went very quickly, as most parakeets do. Hmm. And so it was just kind of sad, but... pets enrich your life, and then they kind of leave a little bit of a hole when they go.
Yeah. We lost our pet rabbit, who's been with us not quite 12 years, 11 years, 6 months, something like that. So my daughter's pet rabbit, which she got just before she started 6th grade, she's now in graduate school, so time has passed. Mm-hmm. But in any case, it's been a tough weekend, and quite frankly, it's been a tough tech weekend because John and I found nothing that interested us much, even with Mobile World Congress firing up in Barcelona this week, which I believe it's like Monday over there now, so it's actually in full swing.
I mean, Mobile World Congress, now that we're down to 2 platforms, that came out earlier this week that now... I think it was Gardner, when they're doing the mobile platform breakdowns, they are just doing iOS, Android, and other. Yeah. And other takes up less than 0.1%.
Right.
So really, ever since it became a two-horse game and a one company, one horse, and then one horse, many companies game, it's just not as interesting, I think, to follow some of these things as it used to be because... there's no software innovation. There's just hardware innovation.
Yeah, in fact, I don't think Apple even shows up at Mobile World Congress, do they?
No.
So basically, it's one platform.
Yeah.
I mean, there, at the biggest mobile tech show in the world.
And we know that Android, I think, according to the stats that came out this week, is on something like 86% of all smart devices. It's huge, and... it definitely has a lot that's going on in it and a lot of cool stuff that's going on in it. It's just that if you are not too interested in radically different hardware, if you think software innovation is what's most interesting, you don't see a lot of that other than custom launchers and custom apps for things. And I don't know. I was always one that was much more interested in the software side of things than the hardware side.
Yeah. I have an interest in... in both, in the sense that, you know, I want to see new things that my phone can do or better, you know, like the steady increase in the capabilities and quality of photos in camera phones, for example. You know, for a long while, photos on a camera phone are essentially a joke. You know, they're sub-megapixel, for folks who remember the old, you know, camera phones. And, of course, remember the smartphones with no cameras, right?
Yeah.
I think Windows Mobile was really late to the game in adding cameras to their phones.
Well, and we remember when cameras, this is just a bunch of people talking about how old they are. We remember when adding cameras was a negative thing. And you had these people going, I can't bring a camera into my workplace. Yeah. I can't, you know.
And that's still true for some people.
Yeah, it is. But apparently the minority did not win out. And now every device on the planet seemingly has a camera.
Yeah, and a GPS and all kind of things some organizations would rather you not have on-prem. Or in the field, in some cases, as we were talking about a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. With GPS tracking. So, at any rate, the only other thing, I've kind of read the, you know, Nokia introducing, I think, an Android One-based smartphone now that they're separated from, well, not separated, it's the old Nokia that was never part of Microsoft, I guess. Mm-hmm. So they have Nokia's back in the phone business, which is interesting. Wish them well on that. I don't know if I would say I was a big Nokia fan, but I had a couple of Nokia phones that I appreciated using. And the only thing I'd like to note is that there appears to be a steady extermination of headphone jacks from phones, which I find sad.
I find it sad, but at the same time, if you were one of those people that 3 years ago when the rumors started coming out that Apple was going to remove the headphone jack.
Right.
You were one of those people that really bought in when all the other companies feigned anger and said, no, we've got our headphone jacks. And
we've got your back, Jack.
For life. And, yeah, exactly. If you were one of those people that actually believe that, you need to seriously think about how much your love of tech is overwhelming your understanding of market economics. And that, you know, the headphone jack, yeah, it's backwards compatible for, you know, 100 years.
Yeah.
But it is not the technology that anyone wants to be putting in their modern smartphone. And now they're just not putting it in their modern smartphone.
Yeah. I think, you know, basically, like a lot of things, you know, Apple is the vicious eliminator of tech things. Of birds. I think a bird just invaded our pen. But at any rate, they like to eat the rabbit food. Yeah, the pellets. So, well, I'll go on a tangent before we get back to Apple, the eliminator of all things good. So we've got two rabbits. I've got one rabbit left. And in the last couple of months, some of the birds, what are they? Probably doves or something, have discovered that, you know, we have a bowl of pellets out in the open for the rabbits. So they've been coming to invade it. So I tried all kinds of different ways to protect the food from these, I was going to say a bad word, birds. You can insert your own, you know, expletive. And finally, I hit on one by accident. So one day I took a clean, unused litter box, you know, for a small animal. And I turned it upside down, and I used it as a cover on the food dish. And I said, well, this is kind of a pain because now I have to go uncover the food dish a couple times a day to when I'm home. The rabbits are outside and when I'm home, and they're in kind of locked cages to protect them when I'm not home. And I thought, well, that's going to be annoying. Except one day, the younger rabbit, who's still with us, decided that this was annoying too, and she figured out a way to take the cover off. So when she's hungry, she goes over, she knocks the cover off, eats in the bowl. Once she put the cover back on, too, which is pretty interesting.
Oh, that was nice work.
Yeah. But at any rate, okay. Apple, the exterminator of all things good. So, you know, Apple is infamous for taking away things, not just headphone jacks. They took away the RS-232 serial port, which most of many people probably don't remember. They took away the parallel printer port, which most people don't remember.
They took away the floppy drive.
Floppy drive. CD, optical disk drive.
Optical drive. Yes, Apple has killed everything that you thought was essential.
Yeah, they've taken away SD card slots.
The SD card slot, the Kensington lock port.
Yeah, that really bothered. Basically, they're trying to follow Steve Jobs' philosophy to extreme. There were nothing, there were no holes of any kind into your system. You know, they're anti-hole. And I think that whatever there is, you know, the hole defenders or whoever, some kind of association needs to be formed to protect holes. Because, you know, some holes are useful. Like my headphone jack hole. That was useful.
Yeah. I find it very interesting how Apple's doing this. And I'm acutely aware of this as I'm on a 2015 MacBook Pro, which is the last MacBook Pro that had all the holes.
The last good one.
Yeah, perhaps the last good one. And even though I still have my 2009 MacBook Pro that's even got more holes because it's got a CD drive in it.
Right.
I'm curious how long, you know, I've never had a laptop feel fast after, even an Apple laptop, after 5 or 6 years. You know, my 2009 MacBook Pro, about 2015, it started feeling really sluggish with modern operating systems. So it's only a matter of time before this 2015, even though it's fully loaded and get it out, before it starts to feel sluggish. And I'm curious what I'm going to be thinking the next time around when I have to upgrade. So
I don't know. You know, when my daughter graduated from college last spring, I replaced her 4-year-old MacBook Air, which I am using, by the way, is working fine. With a new MacBook. And I said, what do you want? Here, that, you know, we kind of talked about the choices and the pros and cons. And she said, wait a minute, you're telling me the new MacBook Pro doesn't have an USB port and doesn't have an SD card slot? I go, yep. Then I don't want it. And so I got her a MacBook Air, even though, I mean, it's a new MacBook Air and it's whatever Apple was selling in this, the summer of 2017. But it's based on older processor technology. You know, it's kind of like the Mac Mini, right? It hasn't really been refreshed in a while. So, but she preferred that because it had all the right pukas, you know, all the right, which is Hawaiian slang for holes. It had all the right holes in it. You know, it had an SD card slot, it had a USB. And she takes a lot of photos with a traditional digital camera, so she needs that slot. Had a USB port, you know, plug things in, including, she has one for emergencies. I don't think she's ever used it, but she has an external DVD drive in case she ever needed to, you know, do something with that. And, of course, she uses it with thumb drives, right? So, you know, and we'd have to go, you know, make sure she doesn't lose a dongle or buy her a spare dongle. And those dongles are not cheap. They're like, what, $80?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, $160 just for, you know, say one for her apartment and one to, you know, travel around with. You know, in case she loses it, she'll still have one at home kind of thing. So, and it just adds to the cost, really. So, yeah. Anyway, sad to see the headphone jack go. I'm sure in a few years we won't notice it, but... You know, Bluetooth headphones aren't the answer either. They're just imperfect as a means to connect to your phone. Anyway, before we get to more dying products, because this is a weekend of death for us, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yes.
Of real and of, you know, allegorical, I guess, or metaphorical. Now, one good thing, one good piece of news before we get into more depressing discussions, is that here in Hawaii, Tesla has put in 300 power walls into a bunch of public school classrooms, because we have a huge problem with heat in public school classrooms here. As you might imagine, being in subtropical climate, I think the average temperature in classrooms is between mid-80s and mid-90s sometimes in the warmer parts of the year, which is pretty much everything except now. You know, so they've got 300 Tesla power walls to power air conditioning units in the schools. So that's pretty interesting in my opinion, and apparently they're going to put in more. Was it 300 or 3,000? Anyway, it was a lot. And I'll put a link to it, to a news item. So, pretty cool. I'd kind of like a power wall myself, but I'm not sure I could put one into where I live. All right, on to our final discussion item, because, man, we had no tech items that interested us this week, John.
No, we didn't. I did a quick run through looking for them, and I did a search of my phone to see if I downloaded any cool apps lately, and
I did,
not do any of those things. Yep. Although I did download the app that you mentioned last week, Sticky, and I've been having fun with that.
That's pretty fun.
But yeah, this week, looking at what was available, I found an article that ZDNet did on products that Microsoft has killed.
Yeah, usually we talk about Google killing products.
Yeah, we usually talk about Google and how Google's killed everything. We think of Microsoft, I think, mostly as evolving their products. In fact, some of these did evolve into other products, which were then killed. So I thought it was very interesting to kind of run through the list and see if Todd and I cared about these products that have been killed. And also, I have one that I've added, and Todd's added a couple that we both wonder about or wonder what would have happened, one of which I would really like if it was still available.
But. Yeah.
So the first, we'll get there. We'll get there, Todd. Don't start crying yet.
Yeah, I know.
The first two products kind of go together. It was the Media Center edition of Windows Vista, if you remember that. I still have a machine over here that's shipped with Media Center edition. I think XP, there was a Media Center edition as well. And the Media Center extenders, which were actually hardware devices that hooked up to your television, your entertainment system, and extend the Media Center experience so that you didn't have to have a computer sitting there that had Windows Media Center running on it. Did you ever have any use of these, Todd? Did you ever play with them at all?
You know, it's funny. I have a Media Center remote control from Microsoft, you know, that's supposed to let you... maybe it worked with the Hot Pog board. I can't remember, but it was actual Microsoft remote control, even though it might have worked with third-party hardware. And I tried it, and, you know, it's kind of a predecessor to their video marketplace and stuff, and they never really caught on. The UI was, you know, I don't know. Maybe I didn't have a powerful enough PC. But no, I really didn't use it. Never had an extender. I know some of our friends had. I don't know if you had one, but...
I never had an extender. I have an old Toshiba satellite that shipped with Media Center Edition.
Yeah, me too.
And
desktop that did that.
And it came with a remote, and I actually had a remote for my Xbox that had all the Media Center buttons on it as well.
Yeah.
But I remember every time I played with Media Center, it was just kind of a lousy experience. You know, slow.
Yeah, same here.
It wouldn't buffer properly, even right. on an in-home network. Today, I use Plex, and I'm very happy with Plex. Plex is working. You know, Plex in 2018 is basically what Media Center was supposed to be in 2005, 06. So,
you know, I don't
miss it. Microsoft was definitely onto something, but as with many things, they didn't do it that well.
Oh, yeah, they were definitely onto something. I mean, I know I bought, while I didn't use Media Center much, I bought a Hophog board or something, or a couple of them probably. And I, you know, used it to watch TV on my desktop PC and that sort of thing. I think it could even record. Yeah, I think it could even record video.
Yeah, it could.
So, you know, I enjoyed that. Hophog made a great product. Not sure whatever happened to them. But the Media Center itself, not so much. And I don't miss it because never really used it.
I would miss it if it wasn't in my life right now in Plex. If it was one of those things where there hadn't been a good replacement, but there was a good replacement.
You know, it's funny. I remember a Plex media app for, I can't remember now. Maybe it might have been Android, but I can't remember what it did. And I wonder if it's the same company. Because it was media related. I just, you know, never really used it much. But in any case. Next up on your list?
Next up is the always fun actually, to think about Kinect.
I have one. I still have one.
I have one too. For my Xbox 360, yep. I have not. I don't have one for my Xbox One. I don't know if there was one for the Xbox.
I don't think there was one. Yeah.
Have you used it recently?
When I first got my Xbox 360, in fact, I bought the Xbox 360 specifically because of Kinect. You know, and I tried it, and it just, you know, my living room wasn't the right size for it. It's too small, and I mean, I could have moved the couch around, I guess, but I didn't want to, and it really wasn't that reliable. In terms of recognizing the gestures I was making, several of them which are kind of rude at the end. So no, I never really did use it much. I thought it had a lot of promise. I thought the voice recognition on it had more promise than the gestures, to be honest.
The only cool thing that the Kinect lasting did, and so you know, I bought one too, and I used it for a while, and then it's been collecting dust for many, many moons now.
Yeah.
But the cool thing that it did bring that we don't have a modern replacement for is dynamic video conferencing with another group on the other end using a Kinect. So I remember Don Sorcinelli talking about, I believe, him, he would be video chatting with extended family, and the Kinect would actually zoom in on whoever was talking and then zoom back out. And that was kind of a really cool thing that today I really wish Apple would come out with a camera that would plug into an Apple TV that would allow for FaceTime or something like that, so that my wife and I, when we're sitting on our couch having our weekly chats with our in-laws, we don't have just a small iPad screen, or I guess we can AirPlay it to the Apple TV, but still, it'd be nice to have it all in one unit. So that was something that the Kinect was onto, but the game interaction, the games was definitely where it was sold. I don't think just ever really was there.
Yeah, and I should note that modern webcams, especially ones designed for a small group video conferencing, do that. They will focus in on the speaker. Some can even have some articulation on the camera head so it can swivel. So that feature, you know, existed back then for other devices, mostly back then higher end conferencing cameras. But today you can buy them for, I don't know, about $200, I think, a webcam with articulation on it.
Interesting.
Let's see what else. Kinect. Yeah. So Kinect, I think I remember Microsoft touting it as one of the fastest selling, you know, kind of a exponential growth in sales and all that, and then it just poof disappeared.
Yeah. And it's one of those that definitely did just disappear.
Yeah.
Now this next one, you and I knew well.
I have one.
A lot of overlap. I had one as well. I had two. I had an original, and then I had the second generation. And we had mutual friends who owned literally almost a dozen of these.
Yeah.
And that is the Zune.
Yep. It was actually a pretty good device. You know, it was ugly as sin. I mean, seriously, it was ugly.
It was a decent competitor to the iPod Video, iPod Classic.
Right.
As soon as the iPod Touch came out, man, did the Zune look outdated.
Yeah.
Just like the iPod Classic looked outdated as soon as the iPod Touch
came out. Absolutely, absolutely. And Zune, I mean, Microsoft did come out with the Zune HD, which is basically an iPod Touch clone. I know Sven had one. I remember him showing it to me at a summit. And he had, I think, a mobile version of Project Gotham Racer on it. And I almost bought it just for that, because I'm a huge fan of Project Gotham Racer on the Xbox. But the Zune, original Zune was, God, it was just a clunky, thick piece of, you know, whatever it was. I don't think it was metal, but you could hurt somebody if you hit somebody with that thing.
It was plastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and congratulations, Microsoft. You shipped a product in a color no one has used since.
Yeah, people have described it as, well, I probably shouldn't say it. We're kind of a PG-rated show. There's some bad words people use to describe the colors.
Yeah, that color brown was not considered.
Is that what you call it? Brown, okay.
Yeah, that's what you call it.
There was also a greenish thing, but, and we know things that are colored brown and green. Well, you can probably guess the bad words. But I remember, I don't know if you remember this, John, but the there was a point in time around, you know, when the Zune was available, that you could buy a case for the iPod that looked like, made it look like a Zune so nobody would steal it. Seriously, there
that
was
doesn't surprise me.
There was a Zune case for the iPod, so it'd uglify it. Oh, the next one. Wow, I almost forgot about that one.
Yeah, the next one. So, as I said, Microsoft sometimes doesn't kill things directly. Sometimes it allows things to move on to a different plane of existence, and that is Groove Music.
Yeah.
Now, Microsoft had, like, about, what, 10 years, 15 years of trying to sell music?
Oh, gosh.
There was Plays for Sure, which didn't always play for sure, and Windows Media, and what was the one that they did with, there was a Microsoft and MTV Networks or something.
Oh, I don't remember that one.
That used Plays for Sure. Yeah. Urge.
Wow, I don't remember that one at all. Urge.
Yeah, let me find some detail on it. I'm pretty sure it was called Urge.
Yeah.
Urge, Digital Music Service. It was a online music distribution service run by MTV Networks, integrated into Windows Media Player 11. Opened on May 17, 2006. Used Microsoft Windows Media DRM, so the whole Plays for Sure thing. Yeah. And it died in 2010.
Which means you can no longer play its product, its content. Yes. Yeah. I've got a couple of things like that.
Yeah. So Groove was the last iteration of this.
Yeah.
And it is now gone as well. Did you ever use any of these services?
I think I might have tried, not Groove, but I may have tried one of the more recent ones that also died. I can't remember what it was called. And I bought some music, or I might have even had like a 1-year subscription to play with it. And I'm not sure I saved the music, so I probably can't play anything from it anymore. I think you could play, you could get some non-DRM stuff downloaded, but I don't remember. After I got burned by the, it wasn't actually a Microsoft product. Microsoft had teamed back in the Pocket PC days. Yeah, Pocket PC days. Microsoft had teamed up with some third parties to provide DRM music on the Pocket PC, and I think I bought one or two. I think I wrote an article about it for the old Microsoft mobile site that Jason Dunn used to edit, or was the editor of four. And you know, I bought a couple of songs, and then the DRM service disappeared, and I can no longer play those songs. So, not a fan. After that, I said, "Nah, I'm not going to do any Microsoft content. They're just too flaky."
That's the quintessential aspect of this entire list is once bitten, twice shy, Microsoft.
Yeah.
And there's a few other things that we'll see once bitten, twice shy.
Yeah.
So, Groove, Microsoft Music, Urge, Plays for Sure, all of that stuff just
gone. Just
never could compete with iTunes.
No. And, you know, iTunes has been around since 2001.
Yeah.
So come this fall, it'll be 17 years old, still going strong. It's pretty amazing when you think about it.
And it hasn't had to change its name.
Nope. No,
yeah.
Yep. And it has dropped DRM along the way.
Yeah.
So, you know, people complain about the app or the software on the Mac, which I agree with, but the Surface itself has been, hey, it's still here. Can't knock that.
Very true.
Yeah.
And actually, I find iTunes on the Mac to be pretty solid. On Windows, it's still a little shaky.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Oh, I have some strong opinions on this one, but I'll let you start.
I played with Flight Sim, various versions. I enjoyed playing with it. Never played it probably more than 10 hours all told, but I do miss it. It was cool.
Yeah, I have the exact same kind of experience. So I remember first buying and playing with Flight Simulator back in, was it the DOS days? Yeah, I think it was still in like MS-DOS. And like you, I really didn't play with it a lot because I'm not very good at it. And I never really learned how to fly the darn thing. I could barely take off, could never land. Landing is hard, it turns out. But, you know, I was always impressed by it. And I bought the upgrades just to kind of see what they were doing over time. And and there wasn't even an online version, if you remember that one.
Mm-hmm.
And that allowed you to fly into rear. They added Hawaii in that one, so I could fly around Honolulu Airport, which I thought was pretty cool. And I really miss it. You know, it was a way for people to show. I'm not sure what. There's some other modern equivalents, you know, things you don't really use except to show other people.
Yep. But
that was one of those pieces of applications that you would fire up on your desktop just to show other people what could be done on desktop, because it was, for a time, it was pretty cool. It was very cool.
Very true.
And I kind of miss, I mean, I know there are, you know, many other kind of games now that are far beyond what Flight Simulator can do, but I kind of wish Microsoft had spent some of their billions of dollars to maintain it. I mean, you know, how much would it cost to have a couple of avid Flight Simulator devs keep it running?
You know Microsoft. If people love it, we're going to get rid of it.
Yeah.
That's Google's mantra tip.
Yeah.
Next up on our list, most people will remember the ad campaign if they are techies. Mommy, why is there a server in the house? Windows Home Server, a modified version of Windows Server 2003 that allowed for easier setup of home backup and home file sharing.
Yeah, this is pre-cloud, kind of.
Yes, pre-cloud. Build your own cloud. Did you ever have a Windows Phone home server?
I did not. I had a Linux box that I used as kind of the equivalent, you know, with Samba and stuff.
Yeah, same here, which is probably why it didn't take off.
Yeah, and it was free, right? I just paid for the hardware.
Yeah, it was a regular Windows license. Yeah. Windows Home Server did cost, but yeah, Linux server, which is honestly what most geeks were using and still use to this day, is some Linux-based backup system. So
even if they don't know it.
The group that Microsoft was targeting was already using much cheaper software. Yeah.
And I say even if you don't know it, because a lot of people who use these, you know, off-the-shelf home NASs or, you know, a wireless access point where you can plug in a hard drive, it's probably running basically some, you know, version of Linux and some, you know, Samba-like product to let you share files with it or storage on it. So you may be using Linux and not know it.
In fact, I'm not sure. So if you think of the big three companies out there that are doing NASs, so Synology, QNAP, and Drobo, I think they're all Linux-based.
Hmm. Yeah, I've never never dug deep into any of them. But why not, right? Yeah. I mean, it's the simplest way to implement it.
Yeah, they are. They are all Linux-based.
Yeah.
And even older ones that are not as active, like the Western Digital MyBook or the Linksys NSLU2, those are Linux-based. Raspberry Pis. Yeah, so basically anything that you're going to actually be using for the same purpose is now Linux-based.
Yeah.
So, sorry, Microsoft. Great idea, but your target audience already was using something cheaper.
Yeah. Kind of like the media center.
Next up.
Aww.
Yes, it's time to talk about our kin.
Yeah.
Not our kin, not you and I.
Yeah, Microsoft's kin.
Microsoft's kin that they unceremoniously killed very quickly after
like
launch.
2 months? Did it even last 2 months?
I want to say it was somewhere in like the 60-day range.
Okay.
I can look up, while you give me your thoughts, I will look up the exact amount of time Kin was on sale.
Well, you know, and I don't want to be too brutal here, because we know people who worked on that project, and I don't want to hurt their feelings, but seriously, what were you thinking? I mean, this was a relatively costly product for its target audience, which was teenagers.
Yes, because born out of the T-Mobile Sidekick, the team that was Danger Incorporated.
Right.
And it was a cool idea, but at the time, anyone who was serious about a Microsoft smartphone was using Windows Mobile or Windows Phone.
Right.
Microsoft described the phone's target demographic as men and women between ages 15 and 30.
Yeah.
If above 30, you were supposed to get a Windows phone. And below 15, you weren't supposed to be using a phone at all.
Yeah.
Let's see. Went to market on May 14th, 2010. And Verizon stopped selling the phones in July of 2010.
Jeez.
July 18th.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now, it, you know, from a
more than 2 months.
So, you know, by the years alone, now, first of all, the Apple iPhone was already in full gear mm-hmm. at that point. Android had now started to catch up and was producing really interesting phones.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing was, well, it wasn't, I can't remember the price. And I'm looking it up now, but I don't see it. But, it, you know, it had a monthly cost. Like the danger that it's based on, you know, it was cloud based essentially, which is kind of ahead of its time. But when they turned off the cloud, the kin became useless.
And you know, the whole reason why, as was pointed out, that it took a year and a half or 3 years delay was because they switched it over from the Sidekick operating system, which was a variant of Linux, to Windows CE.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was the kiss of death. You got to make it use your own stuff, and your own stuff takes a while.
Now, I did have one interesting feature that I liked, and that it had a slide-down QWERTY physical QWERTY keyboard.
On both models.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And because back then, I still wasn't really thrilled with this whole type on a keyboard, I mean, on a screen thing. I'd gotten used to it, but I still like physical keyboards. But yeah, it was just marketed wrong. It had a weird audience market that, you know, you basically needed your parents to buy it for you if you were a kid. Mm-hmm. I mean, all kids need their parents to buy them, you know, whatever it is, but specifically targeted kids, and I don't think they thought this through. It's sort of like when they weren't going to take away the month view from calendar. I don't think they thought that through.
Yeah, I don't think they ever thought a lot of that through.
Yeah.
Speaking of something they didn't think through, what was most of Nokia?
Yeah.
Microsoft killed.
Yeah, bought and killed.
Bought and killed.
What did they pay for it? Like $9 billion?
A lot.
It was a lot.
It was a huge amount of money
to
then have die. And I guess we can add into this, because they are very closely related, Windows 10 Mobile.
Yeah, which I never used, ever.
I mean, this was supposed to be the next direction for Windows Phone, the thing that was supposed to save Windows Phone.
Yeah, it's why they bought Nokia.
Yeah, it was Microsoft's going to buy Nokia. Nokia's going to take over Windows Phone development. Windows Phone development looked really good for a couple years there. Some really cool hardware and really nice hardware coming out of Nokia that neither you or I bought, because we kind of saw the writing on the wall. It was cool, but...
Yeah.
We were happy to let people like Sven and Jack and others sort of tell us about it.
Right.
And they were happy with it.
Yeah, they are. And well, Jack, I think, is still happy with it.
We had been once bitten, twice shy, I think, at that point. And so, yeah, a lot of promise there and a lot of just no resources.
Yeah.
And the fight had already gotten down to the two heavyweights, I think, by the time this one really kicked in.
You know, when Microsoft took away the ability to move my apps, several of which I depended on daily, from Windows Mobile 6 to Windows Phone 7, and I'm thinking specifically about eWallet and HandyBase and a couple other things. You know, not having eWallet on my Windows Phone 7 was a giant problem, and it's what prompted me to move to the iPhone. I mean, I was already using an iPhone, but it made me switch from Windows Phone to iPhone as my daily driver at the time. Because I could get eWallet on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got eWallet off and I looked at my Windows Phone 7, I said, what do I need you for?
And how are you paying the bills?
Yeah. And so, you know, I said, well, I was HTC HD7, I think, HD7. And I said, well, I'm going to retire you because you have no use for me anymore. Although I will say the Windows Phone 7's Bluetooth stack is still the best. I mean, you know, the headphones, car speakerphones, all that stuff worked, which I can't say the same for the ones I currently have. But mm-hmm. I switched to a Nexus 4 at that point and never looked back. That was the HD 7 was my last Windows phone, running Windows Phone 7.
Yep. All right, so we'll pass up Windows Phone for now. Yeah. The Microsoft Band.
Never had one.
Never had a device that it could connect to, so I never bought one for that reason.
Yeah.
I was always hoping that they would eventually, they said they were going to have an iOS version of the client. I don't think they ever did.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, when they get an iOS version, at the time I was picking up a lot of different smartwatches and smart devices like that, and I thought, well, I'll buy one and play with it. And then they just never came out with it for iOS, and so my Apple Watch by that point had gotten pretty firmly installed on my arm, and I didn't play with it, but I miss it. I think it was a cool idea, and I think the form factor was kind of a nice, slim form factor.
Yeah. It just couldn't compete with the Fitbit and Garmin's and whoever else out there in the world.
If it had come out today, and it, you know, today it's a market between Android Wear, which is quickly dying,
yeah,
Apple Watch, and Fitbit. Yeah. If it was Fitbit, Apple Watch, and Band, I think it might have had a shot. But at that time, when it came out a few years ago, there were so many fitness trackers. You had Jawbone on the market. You had all these. Just everyone was in that market in the wearables.
Highly competitive.
Band just got kind of lost.
Yeah.
A relaunch of Band now that maybe was cross-platform, iOS and Android, and sort of said, hey, you know, when you don't want to be wearing a big clunky watch, even, you know, Android Wear or an Apple Watch, then maybe you want to just wear this little sleek band for working out or stuff like that. I think that could potentially have a little bit of traction.
And, you know, actually, I have, it's not a band, but I have a orphan product too now, and that's the Fitbit One, which is, you know, the ones that you either clip on your belt or put on your pants. It's not in a wristband. And I quite frankly, I already wear a watch. I don't want to have two bands on my wrist, you know, one on each wrist or whatever it is. So, you know, I'm not sure what to do when my Fitbit One dies. The Apple Watch is quite frankly not as good an activity tracker as the Fitbit One, just in terms of steps and stairs and things like that. Because quite frankly, I don't always wear my watch, but I always have a Fitbit One in my pocket, no matter where I am. So,
yeah, for me, always having my watch on, and then when the few times I don't have my watch, I'm usually carrying my phone, so the phone will pick up the activity tracking at that point.
Yeah.
But you're right. If you're not always wearing a watch or you're not always carrying your phone around, it was nice to have just a little pocket-sized tracker. Yeah. I also really like the Fitbit One.
It was awesome. Yeah. So next up, and then we need to get back to the watch, but next up you have – I don't even remember this product. Oh, wait. I do remember it. Go ahead, I think.
Yeah, this was the Microsoft Automotive Division, Ford Sync Services, or Sync Services that Ford launched were basically the primary thing here. I never had a car with this. It looked kind of cool, but then again, a lot of Microsoft products look cool in product demos and then aren't.
Right.
So I have no idea on this one. I can't say much about it.
No, I can't either. I know that on the various Twit podcasts, Leo Laporte had Ford as a sponsor, as a commercial, you know, for their commercials. So, and he promoted it quite a bit, but I don't think I even know anybody who had one. And, you know, amongst our friends, that's kind of unusual for nobody we know to have had one.
That is true. Well, I have an honorable mention. I don't know if you ever used this. It's on our list. Microsoft Health Vault is still around, but it's not half as used as it used to be.
Oh, I don't. I remember it. I didn't know it was still around. I thought it was gone.
I'm pretty sure it's still around.
It's kind of the Abe Vigoda of tech products, you know. He's not sure.
It really is, but it's one of those things where if you are, it is still around. You can still use it, and it's been around now for over 10 years.
Wow, which is even
more amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of the Google Voice of Microsoft products.
It's a really strange product in that it must be serving something on the back end for Microsoft.
Yeah,
I think it is because I think it actually interfaces with. Actual hospital.
I was going to say that
medical records and all that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that it's still there. I like that it's around, but it is a strange little service that hasn't died yet. So honorable mention of something that could die in the future.
Okay. And now a couple of things that were not on the ZDNet list that John and I added to this list of Microsoft products that are no longer with us is one that, and I hope I don't start tearing up talking about it, but it's a Microsoft Spot Watch, you know, and
we're very fond of your
Spot Watch. I liked my Spot Watch. I had one. I wore a Spot Watch for probably, I don't even remember when it came out, but I'm going to say it died in, I think, the January 2012. So I must have worn it at least 5, 6, 7 years. You know, I had two watches, I think. And one or the other, I, you know, they're both, Suunto.
Yeah.
I had two of them and, you know, one after another. And they were great for what they were. You know, it was one-way data, sure, fine. But I could get notifications of email and, you know, calendar alerts and news. And I found one-way was just fine. I paid $65 a year, I think, for the service. Or something like that.
And it was such a strange idea for a service that we would think of today. You know, the idea that we're going to deliver these over FM.
FM.
Radio transmission.
Yeah.
Not through your home Wi-Fi. No. Not through, you know, you need something that's always there. And cell radios were too expensive at that point. Yeah. And too infeasible to do. So, yeah, I had a Fossil spot watch.
Yeah.
My problem was I lived in an area that didn't get great coverage for it. Yeah. And I was literally between two major cities, Cleveland, Ohio, and Toledo, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And in either of those cities, I could get coverage. But where I was at, where I was living, I didn't get coverage.
So I had the same thing. So I live, you know, outside of Honolulu. And where I live, there is no that. I think the radio station its subcarrier is based on is reachable where I live. But for some reason, I could not get service in at my home. And so when I first got it, I had a heck of a time trying to figure out if my watch is working or not. But it turns out that if I drove 4 miles westward, it would pick up the station and I would get service. So while I was in downtown where I work, I would have service. But when I came home, it didn't work, which was
well, that's sad. Definitely what you want to do. To get information quickly, you want to be able to drive 4 miles.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
Yeah. But I still, you know, even despite that limitation, I still really enjoyed the watch. I mean, it was great. Even when I traveled, you know, it automatically, back then this was novel, it would automatically pick up the subcarrier of the city you're in if it was there. And it only worked in the U.S., I think, and maybe parts of Canada. But, you know, I only really traveled in the U.S. most of the time. And I'd land in, you know, L.A. or San Francisco, Seattle or New York, wherever. And my watch would automatically change time and tell me what time zone I was in. I thought it was pretty cool back then.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Well, I enjoyed the idea of the spot watch, and I enjoyed my spot watch before it actually died, because I remember my Fossil watch did die at some point.
Yeah.
But it would have been better if it had had just even a Wi-Fi radio, so that when you were on a network that it could know about,
yeah,
it could get updates. But
well, it's funny, though. You know, I remember at a Microsoft Summit way back when, you know, probably like 08 or 09, you know, there was a bunch of booths that were set up for us to take a look at. And one of the groups is the Microsoft Spot Group. And they had a prototype of a Bluetooth spot watch that was talking to a pocket PC or Windows mobile phone back then. And then, oh my gosh, it is exactly what I want, you know. So I don't have to use the FM subcarrier and I can sync with my phone. And it had like phone call notifications and, you know, all the stuff that we enjoy on our Apple Watch or Android Wear watches these days. And it had it like 10 years ago.
Yeah. Well, you got to remember, Microsoft, if there's a company that has a legitimate claim to care about wearables, it is actually Microsoft. They were the ones that, you know, when the Timex Datalink watch came out, the 90s, they had packaged the installer with Windows 95. Yep. I mean, they were okay with this whole idea of a smartwatch. And then, unfortunately, others just sort of lapped them.
Yeah, as they did with so many other things.
Yes. Yeah. So, poor spot watches. Yeah. I'm glad that we got through that segment without you tearing up too much.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a tough weekend to begin with for us, and I almost lost it just now.
Yep.
But I made it.
Next product is one that I don't think a lot of people knew about.
Yeah.
It is definitely one that was in what Microsoft considered consumer pre-release, some BS sort of name that Microsoft had for it. I don't really remember what it was called. But if you remember, back in around 2005, 2006, there was a very nice piece of software called FolderShare. It was actually a whole company behind it.
Yeah.
Microsoft bought it. It was peer-to-peer sync. So you installed it on all your computers, and it communicated directly with your computers to sync up files. Yeah. Cloudless peer-to-peer sync.
Yeah.
Then Microsoft bought it and said, you know what? We're going to make a new product out of this that we are calling Windows Live Mesh.
Yeah.
Live Mesh had a cloud option added in. It had the P2P thing. And most interestingly enough, it had remote desktop tunneling, where you could connect through a web browser or through the Live Mesh client. I believe it was web browser. It might have just been the client. To your own home desktop. And that's something that today, on a Windows machine, I still don't have reliable get back to my own desktop, or Mac for that matter. So that was a really cool idea. Folder share, the peer-to-peer stuff got killed. Everything else eventually transitioned over to OneDrive, SkyDrive, and then OneDrive. So Microsoft still has parts of this, but they lost the remote desktop and the peer-to-peer sync, which was...
The peer-to-peer sync was just fascinating, you know? It had some issues because, obviously, both devices had to be on, but, you know, for a lot of people, that's not a big thing. Yeah, it's really sad. I used it quite a bit, actually. Mm-hmm. I found it very useful. Although I will say that, you know, OneDrive works reasonably well, at least the personal version. The OneDrive for Business, not so much, in my opinion.
It has its quirks.
Yeah. So the last item of our list is really, I think, one of the things that eventually, well, it's not exactly quite true, but its successor, I should say, successor led to John and I meeting years later, and that's the Windows CE-based handheld PC and ActiveSync.
Yes. Which, interestingly enough, ActiveSync is still alive in name only.
Yeah.
Because you still see it referred to with Windows, with Microsoft Exchange Server syncing.
That's right. That's right.
It's still referred to as ActiveSync.
Yeah.
Which I think is really interesting because, you know, you and I remember a time when that product was a desktop product. And then with Windows Mobile 5 and the first major point release of Windows Mobile 5, it brought a direct ActiveSync connection to an Exchange server.
Yeah.
And I remember the days that was leading up to installing on my home Exchange server the software I would need and eagerly checking for the update to my iMate Jazz Jar, aka the HTC Universal.
I still have my Jazz Jar.
Yeah, I do too. To get the point release that would enable direct connection to a Exchange server, I remember talking to people who had BlackBerries and going, you know, with my device, I basically just connect straight to my mail server. I don't have to have another license on my mail server for a BlackBerry Enterprise server. It was a really cool era to be a part of. Obviously, you and I got very into it.
You look back on it somewhat fondly, but I remember calling it Microsoft Active Stink.
Oh, well.
Because it was so unstable.
The 2003 version, 2004, before we went cloud Active Sync, when we were still desktop Active Sync, I remember the, oh, great, I've got a random conflict. Doesn't actually have any way to resolve it. Guess I have to unpair, repair, hard reset, all this other stuff. Then it would work for 3 weeks, and then magically it would break again. So somewhere on my desktop or in my backups, I have 100 of those Pocket PC My Documents folders that you would just kind of accumulate because maybe there was a picture you'd taken in there. Maybe there was a document in there that you would need later. ActiveSync was...
Yeah, and the other problem I ran into is while you could use it on more than one desktop, say one at home, one at work, you could not sync everything on more than one desktop. So you could exchange files, things like that, but you could only have your calendar and contacts synced on one desktop. So you had to choose and then make sure you didn't try to sync those things on the other desktop because then all hell would break loose.
I recall the pain, but also the joy of the early days of Pocket PCs.
Yeah. And, you know, going back, and I don't think we knew each other when Windows handheld PCs were in vogue. That would be the late 90s and early 2000s. I don't think we met till a little later in the 2000s.
Yeah, that's true. But I do remember the first time I saw a Windows handheld PC, and it was a friend of mine had bought it off of eBay.
Yeah.
And had brought it to, of all places, a fireworks display for 4th of July.
That's kind of an odd place, but
Yeah, I was showing it off. So, like, look how cool this thing is. You know, it's Windows CE. It was one of the HP Windows CEs. But, you know, it's really kind of funny to think about. People ask me, or I'll say, you know how long I've had a smartphone? They'll go, when? I'll go, 2002. And they look at me kind of like there were no smartphones in 2002.
The good old What was it from T-Mobile? Pocket PC Phone Edition. Yep.
Yeah, Phone Edition.
Yeah.
The HTC Wallaby.
Yeah. That was a great phone, really.
It had an antenna,
which was awesome.
It looked like a phone.
Yeah.
It was supposed to kind of look like a phone.
Yeah.
I remember being a college student and having one of those and using a piece of software that could mute my phone as soon as I went into a meeting and would unmute my phone as soon as I came out. And I have no idea why to this day we don't have that.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? Or does anything have that? Does Android have that? I have to go check now. I don't think so.
Android, there's ways to do it. I think using something like Tasker, you can do it. I don't think there's a way to set it up on iOS.
Hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. But, you know, the Windows handheld PC was way, way, way ahead of its time. I mean, basically, it preceded, you know, the netbook craze that flamed in and flamed out. It was a small, lightweight, battery-operated, diskless device with a touchscreen most of the time. There are a few without a touchscreen, like the HP Jornada 820.
Mm-hmm.
But like the NEC Mobile Pro 700 and 750, which is one, the 700 is black and white, 750 is color, those were amazing. I mean, you know, I could stick them in a small bag that, say, an iPad mini fits in now, and, you know, it had a great keyboard. I mean, a really touch-typable keyboard. And a decent screen, not a great screen, but a decent screen that I could actually get work done. I could, you know, type documents in, do some spreadsheet stuff. It's too bad Microsoft really never got its act together. You know, it preceded the tablet PC, which was kind of a flop. And, you know, didn't really reemerge from Microsoft until the Surface Pro era, which unfortunately is after the iPad era. So, you know, the iPad captured all the market share. So I really missed the Windows handheld PC. It was an awesome, awesome product. I still think it's a great product. I still wish I had something like it. You know, every time I decide not to take my Surface Pro 4 because it's, and I know this sounds funny, it's too big. I mean, I know it's not big compared to before, but the old days, but it's too big compared to carrying my iPad mini with a keyboard. You know, I can carry my iPad mini 4 with a keyboard in much less space and weight than the Surface Pro 4. And if I had something the size of an NEC Mobile Pro 750 today with a keyboard and a touchscreen, oh goodness, I'd be, and running full Windows, not this Windows 10 S mode junk, you know, real Windows 10 Pro, I would buy it in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
If it were affordable.
You know, we've seen a lot kind of come and go, and I wish we still saw some of these things, but in the end, they lead us to where we're at today, which is not a bad place.
No.
I still think my workflow today is about the best I've ever had in terms of what I can get done on the devices I have. So.
Yeah.
But still, there were some things in the past I missed.
Yep. So, and that's kind of the theme for this weekend, stuff we miss. So at any rate, as usual, we filled up almost an hour talking about nothing.
It's what our listeners have come to expect.
Yeah. Bob. Yeah. Yeah. We're kind of the Seinfeld of podcasts. Maybe not as funny, but I think we're pretty funny. In any case, folks, thanks for bearing with us on our weekend of lost items and pets, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's good to remember stuff sometimes. And
it is.
It's this was an interesting list to go through. I'm glad ZDNet put it together. I'm glad John brought it up, and we added our own three items, the SpotWatch, Live Mesh, and handheld PC and ActiveSync. Four, I guess, if you count that, two things. And we will talk to you next time.